Moncrief on News Talk.
The Eiffel Tower can be an entire 15 centimetres taller during the summer.
It does seem like a huge bit of expansion, but it's normal, just kinetic energy. If you want to get down to the pounds, shillings and pence of it, they gain kinetic energy, the particles, and they take up more space. And for that reason, large structures such as bridges are built with expansion joints. And have no fear, if you are going to Paris on your holidays, they have expansion joints in the Eiffel Tower as well. So you're in no danger. Don't worry about it. But it is remarkable to think all the same, isn't it? Jonathan DeBurka Butler was genuinely flabbergasted to hear that news, weren't you?
I was, yeah, because I was trying to figure out how would that happen. And then I figured it must be something to do with the heat and the expansion.
It's a lot, though, isn't it?
I was never very good at science, I have to be honest with you. But I know a bit about expansion.
I don't know what to say at this point, Jonathan, apart from welcome to the studio.
Thanks very much, Tom.
And keep your texts coming to 53106. There's a big reaction on funerals. Get back to that in a few minutes' time. But your stories around the world, you're starting in Albufeira, which, as I'm sure a lot of people listening will know, is a destination for young students who've finished their leaving cert. And are heading off there in July often.
Yeah, it is. Have you ever been there?
I have.
You're right.
I have.
Was it when you finished your leaving cert?
No, it wasn't. No. It was just as an adult. No,
I've never been myself.
Nothing going on.
But apparently it's a bit of a party town. So this is Albufeira on the southern Algarve in Portugal, of course. And it's popular, as you said, with Irish holidaymakers and also British holidaymakers. And locals in the last number of years and months in particular have been a little bit unhappy with the behaviour of some people. So they are looking at bringing in legislation where basically people will be banned from wandering the streets in swimwear or, you know, just being topless.
Okay. Yeah.
And what I mean by that is even if you're in a bikini, you need to cover up with a shirt.
Okay.
Or if you're topless as a man, you need to cover up
with
a shirt.
Oh, men as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is what they're looking at. And they're saying that there's too much sort of unhealthy behaviour that's happening in the resort, and they want to put a stop to it, or at least they want to encourage people to behave a little bit better. All right, so
sounds fair to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, it was sparked by an incident that took place. You might remember it last June, where 8 British men were filmed dancing completely naked on a bar in broad daylight.
Broad daylight.
Yeah, on the main strip.
Yeah,
and it went all over the internet. It was very embarrassing for them and for the local authorities. So after they arrested these guys and they dealt with them, I don't know if they put them away for a few weeks or they fined them or they kicked them out of the country. But anyway, they dealt with them in some manner. But the major upshot of it was that the authorities came together with local businesses and the mayor, and they said, look, enough of this. We have to do something about it, and this is where we're going to start. People need to conduct themselves in a better manner, be more polite. And any bars or, you know, restaurants that don't do things to sort of stop this kind of behaviour or discourage it at least are also going to be prone to fines.
Okay.
Now, exactly what is going to happen in that regard, I'm not sure.
Right. So that's kind of like selling cigarettes to minors, that type of thing.
Something like that,
I suppose. It's up to you to withhold the law.
Exactly. So that's what they're looking at there.
Right. It seems to be quite broad ranging though, because I see apart from that they don't want you dancing in the nip and they don't want you wearing your bikini if you're not on the beach, they're also banning sex acts in public, which they described as a local nuisance.
Yes, it is a bit of a local nuisance, and especially in this day and age of social media where all of these things get filmed and some of the things you see are quite unbelievable, particularly early in the morning. They just don't want this kind of thing getting out because they're trying to encourage families to actually come to the place as well and broaden the appeal of the destination. So that's what they're looking at. And they're not the only place. There is, you know, backlash against tourism in general in many places around the world. You know, Barcelona had those protests last year, and it appears that locals are kind of sick of
bad behaviour. Is bad behaviour, isn't it? Even if it is bringing in money. So over to the Sudan, where I found this very dispiriting. This story now.
Okay, it's an interesting one. So Sudan and Russia have come to an agreement where Russia are going to be allowed to have a port in the city. Right now, this idea was first floated back in 2017, right, when Omar al-Bashir, who'd been president for life, I don't know how long, he'd been 20 years there, if not longer, in Sudan, when he was still in power. But obviously he was kicked out a few years later, so there was a delay to the agreement. An agreement was made in 2020, but then there was a civil war in Sudan. And interestingly, Russia seemed to have been playing both sides in that civil war, right? So you had the Sudanese army and then paramilitary organization called the Rapid Support Forces, who are kind of the child of the Janjaweed that people will remember from Darfur, right?
Yeah.
And they had, those two armies were so powerful that they, after Omar al-Bashir was, after they got rid of Omar al-Bashir, they started a civil war. And it appears that the Rapid Support Forces, this paramilitary organization, were being helped by the Wagner Group. Okay, and the Sudanese army were being helped by the Russians.
That sounds absolutely crazy.
Exactly,
Jonathan.
Right. But it might go some way to explain why, you know, the Wagner Group and the Russians don't get on so well anymore. But a lot of analysts say that they were, you know, playing both sides and just hedging their bets. Anyway,
okay.
Roll on a couple of years later, and an announcement was made last week after a visit by the foreign minister of Sudan to Moscow that this naval base is going to go ahead. So it'll be very interesting. We don't know where it is exactly, but it's going to allow Russia to keep up to four Navy ships for a period of 25 years in a port somewhere in Sudan. Now, why is this important? It's important for several reasons. One, because it's on the Red Sea, okay? And that is, I think, 12 or 15% of the world's trade goes through the Red Sea up to the Suez Canal, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Further south, China and the USA have naval bases in Djibouti.
Yeah.
Russia will have a naval base further north, closer to the Suez Canal. Is there a possibility of sparking some sort of tension or control around that area? I would suggest that there might be, particularly if Russia has a port in this particular area. There's also one other thing to bear in mind, and that is that you'll remember at the end of last year, Bashar al-Assad was overthrown in Syria. And of course, the reason the Russians were so involved in Syria was because they have a naval base there on the eastern Mediterranean in Tartus, I think it is.
Yeah.
What's going to happen there, we don't know, but quite conceivably they could keep it, or maybe they could move from Tartus to this new naval base in Sudan and maybe set up quite quickly. So it remains to be seen, but it's just one of those stories.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on it and don't be surprised if in 3 or 4 years or 5 years you see something happening in that neighborhood.
Yeah, it's a pity. Just, it seemed with the Syria situation that they were losing influence.
And now
it seems to be the absolute opposite.
Yeah.
Right, so South Korea, and this is a footballer that, he's very well established, this man, isn't he?
Yeah, he's relatively well established. Hwang Yo-jo is his name, I think. He's a 32-year-old footballer. He played for Norwich. He was actually signed by Notts Forest, but I don't think they ever used him. They sent him out on loan to Norwich and various different places. He now plays his club football in Turkey, but he's been capped 62 times for South Korea. So you can imagine he'd be very well known in South Korea himself. Now, he has been handed a suspended 1-year jail term for illegally filming his sexual encounters with a woman. Okay, now, those sexual encounters happened on 4 occasions without her consent in 2022. And what happened was, somehow or other, his sister-in-law managed to get a hold of these recordings and she tried to blackmail him. OK, she posted them on Instagram, obviously, when he didn't bow to that blackmail.
OK.
And as a result, she's got herself in trouble as well. So she's been sentenced to three years in prison September. And he's only got 1 year in jail, but it's been suspended.
Right. But there's so much going on
here. There's a lot.
You know, I mean, first for her to get the video, she's the one who actually posted them.
She's
doing the damage
She, and that is something that the judge said. He took it into consideration that the videos were posted on Instagram by a third party.
Yeah.
And so therefore, when the footballer went and sued his sister-in-law, he pressed the charges.
Yeah.
He was successful in that regard. However, prosecution in this case, and he has admitted to, you know, filming the girl without her permission, and the prosecution in this case was looking for 4 years in jail. So they're going to appeal it. And I think they might have a point, because apparently there's a bit of, now I'm no expert on this, but apparently there's a bit of a problem in South Korea around this kind of secret filming.
This I couldn't get over.
Yeah.
This is quite widespread in South Korea.
Apparently so, yeah. And over the past decade, thousands have been arrested for filming, you know, voyeuristic images and, publishing videos of them having sex. I don't know. For me, a 1 year suspended sentence, it's not a great example, especially when you've got
not.
A guy who's been capped 62 times for
You would have thought if it's a wider problem and they want to try and make an example of somebody,
exactly.
he would have been the guy you'd be going for.
I have a funny feeling that appeal might up his jail term a little bit.
My God. Now, to Brazil. This is a very well-known story, isn't it? This is a story we all saw in the newspaper headlines a few months back and we couldn't get over it.
This is a story about Daisy Moura dos Anjos, and she's a 42-year-old woman who has now died, it appears, in pre-trial detention. So she lived in Torres in South Brazil, and she was in this pre-trial detention in Guaíba, in a prison in Guaíba. Authorities don't know how she did it, but we know why she did it, and that's probably because she was probably going to be spending a very long time in jail. This was a woman who authorities, after a fairly thorough investigation, believe murdered three of her relatives and attempted to murder three others when she poisoned them with a Christmas cake. Now, it should be said these were her in-laws,
yeah,
right? And she didn't make the cake herself. The cake was actually made by her mother-in-law, 62-year-old mother-in-law, who managed to survive, in fact, right? And for the life of them, for a long time, the investigators couldn't figure out how the... They knew it was arsenic, but they couldn't, yeah, figure out how the arsenic had actually gone into the cake. And they knew, because the mother-in-law herself was extremely ill, that it wasn't her. So they ruled her out.
Obviously didn't know.
Yeah. So they ruled her out. So they went through the ingredients, through the house, took out the ingredients.
In the mother-in-law's house.
In the mother-in-law's house.
Yeah.
And they tested them all, and they found the arsenic in the flour that was used in the cake. Could you imagine the packet of Odlums up in the cabinet or whatever?
It's like a murder she wrote or something.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? Yeah,
so she went to the mother-in-law's house, spiked the powder,
so
flour.
Yeah, so every year, right, so this was a tradition that they had on Christmas Eve that they made, and I've seen pictures of the cake and it looks delicious. The icing looks particularly well, I have to say. But it was something that they did every year. So she knew that this was going to be something that happened, and she was probably... You knew what the recipe was and all sorts of things. So she went in, as you say, spiked the flour, and it got into the cake, and then the arsenic got in. And
they were six. They were the mother-in-law. She survived.
The mother-in-law survived. Then there was two of her sisters and one of her nieces died.
God.
I don't know how old she was. Then the 10-year-old grandson survived, and a husband of one of her sisters also survived. But I don't know what the motive was or why. And apparently there was a recent interview done by the mother-in-law, which said, she was quoted as saying, I knew she was a bit strange and potentially a bit evil, but I never thought that she'd come to this.
To be so cold-blooded,
yes,
to send
that
many family members into a room.
Yeah.
That's why I think it went around the world. But on top of that now, they are also suspecting that she may have already have killed her father-in-law.
Yes, in September. Now, I don't know whether that was done with another cake or what, but he appears to have been poisoned. And in fact, the mother-in-law... That interview that I read, she was feeling unwell at that time as well. But they didn't obviously come up with the idea that it was arsenic or whatever at that time. I'm not 100% sure.
Right. But the father, his body has been exhumed and they have found...
Yes, and then they found it. Yes, but not at the time. But subsequently they exhumed the body.
My God. So the woman behind that, she now has lost her life.
Yeah.
And it looks like we may never know.
We'll never know
what was behind all that. What a truly incredible story. Off we go to Thailand and... Elephants. Holy moly.
Yeah, poor old elephants. We actually talk about elephants quite a bit on this slot, but generally we're talking about Africa. In this case, we're talking about Asia and Thailand specifically. Now, in Thailand, Asian elephants were classified as endangered in 1986, right? So obviously there's been conservation efforts ever since then. And those conservation efforts have been quite successful, right? So the population has grown at a rate of 8% each year. Right, so they've, but still, the numbers aren't huge. They've only got about 4,500 wild elephants.
8% a year—that's huge growth.
It is, but they must have been
verging towards exponential if they were left to their own devices.
Imagine your economy was going at that rate; you'd be delighted.
Absolutely,
but at the same time, it is worth mentioning that they must have been starting from a very low base.
Yeah.
And at the same time, something that wasn't mentioned in the report was that there was 24 million humans in 1960, and now there's 73 million. So I think that's probably
I think we
a
have
bit
the
of a
edge
bigger,
of the elephants.
Yeah, we
there.
Probably do. So this was probably one of the reasons why they're coming into conflict with humans so much, and one of the reasons why these elephants are now, well, are they suffering as a result, or at least their population will?
Well, they're coming to the attention of their human
exactly
competitors.
So it's the same
good.
Old story. It's not never a good thing.
No.
Never a good thing at all. So it's the same old story. Humans are trying to farm. They're cutting down forests and they're going into the elephants' natural habitat. Elephants don't have as much space to roam around. They don't have as much food. And they see the farmer over there making a are growing a sugar cane, and they go, sugar cane, very tasty, right. Very accessible, lots of energy. I can fill myself up in an hour rather than wandering around the forest.
This is the equivalent now of a child arriving at the checkout and seeing the sweets there. Can someone please defend the poor elephants
here?
Right?
Absolutely.
On a normal day, has to wander for something like 10 hours to find enough. If he goes into the sugar field, he's done in an hour.
Exactly.
His teeth are going to rot.
But
he's going to have highs and lows of energy.
But he's happy. So it's causing problems, as you can imagine, right? So lots of interactions and incidents with elephants last year. There was 4,700 incidents were recorded in just one section of forest in Thailand. They kind of live in five separate forests around Thailand. And there was 19 deaths in this particular forest. So that's a lot of interaction.
They're
with
human
that they don't
deaths.
Need. Human deaths.
All right. That just seemed like a big problem.
Yeah,
then.
Indeed. So what they're trying to do now is they're bringing in birth control for the elephants, and that they're hoping. And this is very much a long term project.
They
shoot them with a dart.
Okay.
It's a thing called SPAVAX, apparently. So they're going to pick 20 female elephants that they know have had calves before, shoot them with this dart, and they're going to monitor them over the next 7 years and see how it goes. But as I said, it's very much a long-term project, and it's not like they're going in and with a massive cull of the elephants straight away.
And they're also trying to keep the elephants out of the sweet shop, I imagine, as well.
Yes, absolutely. Keep them out of the sugar cane fields.
Good.
And the like.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. I'm very heartened by the number of elephants. 4,422. It's quite a good number.
It is.
Thank God for that. Yeah, right. Yeah. Coming up this week, you have Luigi
Mangione. Yeah, is in court for that shooting of Brian Thompson, which has captured people's imagination for some reason. I'm not sure why people are so caught up in it, but it is. So he'll be in court on Friday, and then Sunday there are these German elections, which are going to be massive.
Absolutely massive.
And hopefully the AfD get a kicking.
Objectivity
out the window there. My apologies, but
most people
they
would agree 100% on that. Thanks very much, Jonathan.
Thanks,
as
Tom.
Always.
Moncrief weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.